You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, June 6, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, today on the program, John Amato from the Uber blog, Crooks and Liars on Delta, Union Busters. Today on the program, got a Nobel Prize in economics. You don't know anything about economics. You think you do, but you don't. That, according to Republicans. Also, America, we're number one, not in happiness. And I'm not quite sure exactly in what. Well, we got the biggest empire. For the time being, anyways. More on happiness and sadness later. Also, in the program today, Rick Santorum has joined. Phew. Thank God. Rick Santorum. Finally, we have a serious Republican candidate. You know what we should have done? Back in the day, Rick Santorum came out with an explanation as to why there were so many pedophilia scandals in the Catholic Church coming out of the Boston Archdiocese, I guess. And it's because Boston's very slutty. And back in the day, I called his office. We don't have that. We're going to dig that up. Maybe we'll play it sometime this week in honor of his presidential aspirations, and asked if they could tell me exactly who the sluts were in Boston. Because I grew up in that area, and there was a couple people I thought who should be labeled sluts, and I wanted to check it out. If I could. There I go again, using that word, sluts. Man on dog, Santorum. If you Google Santorum, you can find in all sorts of just really graphic explanations of this man. But he has entered into the race. Is he the stupidest person in the race? The most backward ass? I don't know. Possibly. Possibly. You have Sarah Palin, and I don't know that she's running. And I don't think she's going to be running. But you understand that she sets the bar so low for stupidity in the Republican Party that just about any... I mean, she was their vice presidential nominee. She still is, actually, I guess. I mean, you know, do you hold that title until there's a new vice presidential nominee? You'll recall last week she said that... Paul Revere had bells and whistles and was telling the British are coming to take away your guns. And as if it was about the Second Amendment prior to the United States existing and forgetting that they were all British citizens at the, with the whistles and the bells, you know. And she has since labeled it just another classic gotcha question. The question, incidentally, was, what have you been up to? That was the question. I'm paraphrasing. It might have been like, what have you been doing here in Boston? Oh, you know, checking out the bells and whistles and the guns and the Paul Revere. And so never back down. That's their motto. And so you have now Palin supporters actually going in. And they were caught trying to change the Wikipedia page about Paul Revere to match, I guess, Sarah Palin's hallucinations or ramblings. And the Wikipedia people said, look, you can't do this. This is ridiculous. And so Palin, of course, goes on to her network, Fox Network. And by her network, I mean the one that pays her, to explain that, in fact, yes, Chris Wallace is wrong, that she knew exactly what she's talking about. Here she is.
You realize that you messed up about Paul Revere, don't you?
You know what? I didn't mess up about Paul Revere. Here's what Paul Revere did. He warned the Americans that the British were coming. The British were coming, and they were going to try to take our arms. So we got to make sure that we were protecting ourselves and shoring up all of our ammunition and our firearms so that they couldn't take it. But remember that the British had already been there, many soldiers, for 7 years in that area. And part of Paul Revere's ride, and it wasn't just one ride, he was a courier, he was a messenger. Part of his ride was to warn the British that were already there that, hey, you're not going to succeed. You're not going to take American arms. You are not going to beat our own well-armed persons, individual private militia that we have. He did warn the British. And in a shout-out, gotcha type of question that was asked of me, I answered candidly, and I know my American history.
He's laughing at her. I don't even know how to respond. The British were actually already there. Were you aware of that? The British were actually already there. Just unbelievable.
Right-wing blogs are backing her up because apparently after the ride, in a completely separate incident, Paul Revere was captured by the British and he told them information when he was captured. So he basically ratted out the Americans, and that's what a good old Paul Revere did that Sarah Palin's so proud of.
Right. My head is so spinning from this. It's just stunning. It's stunning. And if it weren't for the fact that by having this type of lunacy on the right enables sort of corporatist Democrats to tack more towards corporatism because the people on the right are so insane, I would really, really enjoy it. I'd become a Palin groupie just to follow around the country to see what else she's going to say. Meanwhile, Peter Diamond, the Nobel Prize winning economics professor from MIT, he was back in April of 2010 nominated to sit on the Federal Reserve. And apparently, even if you win a Nobel Prize in economics, you are not qualified. This according to Richard Shelby. And let me just, Jonathan Cohn over at TNR says this is the perfect crime because the Republicans will successfully foreclose any opportunity to improve the economy. And then they'll blame the Democrats. And the Democrats do deserve some blame. But it is stunning to have a political party that is so actively trying to sink the economy. Never mind one that is just too weak to aggressively pursue it. The health of the economy. So Peter Diamond writes in the New York Times, announces that he is going to withdraw his nomination. He says the easy answer is to point to shortcomings in our confirmation process and to partisan polarization in Washington. The more troubling answer, though, points to a fundamental misunderstanding, a failure to recognize that analysis of unemployment is crucial to conducting monetary policy. When the Senate Banking Committee took up my nomination in July and again in November, three Republican senators voted for me each time, but the third time around, the Republicans on the committee voted in lockstep against my appointment, making it extremely unlikely that the opposition to a full Senate vote can be overcome. It's time for me to withdraw. I plan to inform the White House, he writes. Richard Shelby of Alabama, the ranking Republican on the committee, has questioned the relevance of my expertise. Does Dr. Diamond have any experience in conducting monetary policy? No, he said in March. His academic work has been on pensions and labor market theory. Now, if Peter Diamond hadn't written so eloquently as to why it's exactly relevant at this time, I would tell you in my own words, but let's use his. Understanding the labor market. Understand, the Fed has a dual mandate in terms of controlling our monetary policy. Make sure that inflation doesn't get out of hand. Make sure that we are as close to full employment as possible. That is a balancing act. That is a balancing act. He writes, but understanding the labor market and the process by which workers and jobs come together and separate is critical to devising an effective monetary policy. The Fed has to properly assess the nature of that unemployment to be able to lower it as much as possible while avoiding inflation. There are different types of unemployment, cyclical and structural. Structural is the nature of our economy has changed. We're no longer an agrarian society, but everybody's farmers. We need to retrain, re-educate broad swaths of our labor to fit in the Industrial Revolution. That's a pretty broad example. Cyclical means nobody's buying anything. And so people are out of work because businesses hire people when they need them to do a job to create profits. If much of the unemployment is related to the business cycle caused by a lack of adequate demand, the Fed can act to reduce it without touching off inflation. If instead the unemployment is primarily structural, caused by mismatches between the skills that companies need and the skills that workers have, aggressive Fed action to reduce it could be misguided. In my Nobel acceptance speech in December, I am, of course, reading from Peter Diamond's essay in the New York Times. I did not win my Nobel Prize in December. I, this is Peter Diamond, discussed in detail the patterns of hiring in the American economy and concluded that structural unemployment and issues of mismatch were not important in the slow recovery we have been experiencing, and thus not a reason to stop an accommodative monetary policy. In other words, accommodative monetary policy would be one which expands the money supply, which means more loans, more liquidity, more buying of treasury bonds, essentially what would be considered a quantitative easing 3. A policy of keeping short-term interest rates exceptionally low and buying treasury securities to keep long-term rates down. Analysis of the labor market is, in fact, central to monetary policy. Shelby also questioned my qualifications. Does he have any experience in crisis management? No. And Diamond makes the point, well, the Fed's not only responsible for mopping up the disaster that has happened, but essentially for making sure that it doesn't happen again. And he writes, among the issues being debated now is how much we should increase capital requirements for banks. In other words, how much money should they have in their vaults, more or less, relative to how much they are leveraging that money. The reason why the financial industry collapsed as it did was for every $1 that banks actually held, they were able to leverage that $1 by upwards to 33, 34 times in holdings with side bets. That would be the functional equivalent of buying a house with no money down. You don't want to finance something like that. There's no collateral there. Selecting the proper size of the increase, speaking of capital requirements, requires a balance between reducing the risk of future crises and ensuring the effective functioning of financial firms in ordinary times. My experience, this is Peter Diamond speaking, analyzing the properties of capital markets and how economic risks are and should be shared is directly relevant for designing policies to reduce the risk for future banking crises. In other words, if you allow banks to leverage $1, leverage $33 with only having $1 to back that up, if the shit hits the proverbial fan, or maybe it's the proverbial shit hits the fan, there's going to be that much more exposure and that much more shit that spreads everywhere. He writes, but we should all worry about how distorted the confirmation process has become and how little understanding of monetary policy there is among some of those responsible for congressional oversight. In other words, he says, the Senate is broken. And these people are idiots. What he doesn't seem to address is these people fundamentally don't care about the suffering of Americans if it means they'll get back into power. And those who pull their strings don't care about the suffering of Americans if it means more corporate profits for them. He writes, concern about the seemingly low current risk of future inflation should not erase concerns about the large costs of continuing high unemployment. There's the rub, ladies and gentlemen. That's what people like Krugman and Dean Banker have been saying for years now. Jonathan Cohn quotes Paul Krugman, aside from the fact that the same senators cheerfully confirmed Bush nominees who didn't know much about economics of any kind, this is especially stupid right now. One of the hot topics is whether the apparent shift in the beverage curve signals a rise in structural unemployment, and Diamond wrote the seminal paper on the whole subject. Cohn continues, in some telling, Shelby is extracting payback for a Republican nominee that the Senate Democrats had blocked, but that nominee didn't have Diamond Sterling credentials, and besides, it's not just Diamond. The use of the Senate procedures to block nominees and legislation more generally has increased substantially since Obama became president. The failure of Obama to recess appointment these people is also indicative of the greater failure of Obama to realize that sometimes in politics, you must fight. Cohn writes, even before Friday's disappointing unemployment report, it was clear the economy was not growing very quickly. Dean Baker says that we could be headed for that that second depression after all. Was not growing very quickly and in need of some sort of stimulus, but by keeping Diamond off the Fed where he would have likely pushed for expansionist policies, Republicans are blocking monetary stimulus just as surely as their votes against infrastructure, aid to the states, and other spending programs are blocking fiscal stimulus. Kill the economy, blame the Democrats. It's the perfect crime. And just to cap it, Krugman weighs in, we are not suffering from supply-side problems. We don't have high unemployment because workers lack the necessary skills. I know this is repetitive, folks. And it's also incredibly frustrating because I don't know that there's anything we could do about it. But at least you'll be knowledgeable. At least when your neighbors go, hey, what the fuck is going on now? How come everybody's going around singing Annie show tunes? And you could say, well, because some people pretend there's structural unemployment and that we should be worried about inflation. Because presumably with too much inflation, the bond markets will respond negatively, even though they're not. Krugman writes, The hypothesis that we're mainly suffering structural unemployment has repeatedly been shot down by evidence. This is a demand-side slump. All we need to do is create more demand. And why is it so protracted? Because the usual tools for pumping up demand have reached their limits. Normally, we respond by cutting short-term nominal interest rates. But the Fed has already done that. And we now have severely depressed private demand thanks to the housing bust and the overhang of consumer debt. People are still paying off debt. They're not spending. He says we should be using fiscal stimulus. We should be using unconventional monetary policy, including raising the inflation target. We should be reducing mortgage debt. This is referring to cram down in any type of policy where the government would step in. But we are not. We're probably just going to, I don't know, I guess, cut Medicare. Destroy Medicaid. Tax cuts for the rich. Who knows? We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is a fun story, though. This one's a fun story. Coming out of DigiTriad, Collier County, Florida. 5 months ago, Bank of America filed foreclosure papers on the home of a couple who didn't owe a dime on their home. They paid for the house in cash. So the case went to court. The homeowners were able to prove they didn't owe Bank of America anything on the house. This is how effed up our banking system is. In fact, it was proven the couple didn't even have a mortgage. So a Collier County judge agreed, and after the hearing, BOFA was ordered by the court to pay the legal fees of the homeowners, Maureen Nigers and her husband. The judge said the bank wrongfully tried to foreclose on the house. So after 5 months after the judge's ruling, the bank still hadn't paid the legal fees. So the homeowner's attorney did exactly what the bank tried to do to the homeowners. He seized the bank's assets. They put padlocks on the doors. Yeah, attorney said they ignored our calls. They ignored our letters. Legally, this is the next step to get my clients compensated. So sheriff deputies, movers, and the Niger's attorney went to the bank and foreclosed on it. The attorney gave instructions to remove the desks, the computers, the copiers, the filing cabinets, and any cash in the teller's drawers. So the sheriffs went in and started doing that. It took about, about 48 minutes of being out of, locked out of the bank. The bank manager handed the attorney a check for the legal fees. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Very funny stuff. Enjoyed that. That's a good attorney. Folks, if you're watching on the Sammy Cam, you will notice we have a new backdrop. We're just playing around with it right now. But as you can see, we also have a new logo for the Majority Report. What does Romina have a website?
Yeah, RominaOtoya.com.
All right, we'll put a link on the site. Right. But when we formally launch this logo, I like it. I like it quite a bit. Would love to hear your thoughts on it. Meanwhile, Alan Greenspan, this guy, we should be making a statue to him, of him in the stockades. Just, you know, obviously not put him in there. He's an old man. That would be a little bit harsh, but there should be a statue of him in a stockade. And I think it could be an extremely popular, I'll tell you something. If there's an enterprising town out there in this country, one that's maybe suffering from the economic downturn. Spend a couple thousand dollars, make a statue of Alan Greenspan in the stockades. This is a guaranteed tourist stop. In fact, if you are a private citizen out there, you should be doing this. We should put one out in front of the door here that people stop by. If any of the Majority Report listeners make this statue, and you got to make it life-size, I'm willing to buy it for $500. I think my wife. Maybe hold off on that. No. We'll auction it. So, according to the Washington Post, Alan Greenspan came out in an interview on Friday on CNBC saying that he supports going back to the Clinton-era tax rates.
The fact that I'm in favor of going back to Clinton tax structure is merely an indicator of how scared I am of this debt program that has emerged and its order of magnitude. This guy is such a scumbag. You will recall that in 2001, he testified in front of the Senate saying, I support President Bush's tax cuts because I am afraid of the surplus that has been created. I kid you not. And then, as late as 2005, I think it was, or 6, he was suggesting you'd be a fool if you did not get an adjustable rate mortgage. And meanwhile, in the context of this argument that we must cut taxes to stimulate the economy, it's the only way to get people hiring. We have talked in the past that the only reason why companies hire is because they have more demand that they must meet. So they need more employees to meet that demand. They're not sitting around saying like, I've got some extra cash. I'll hire employees even though I have no more business. That's absurd. That's absurd. The idea that people aren't buying products is not a function of like, hey, if I had some more marketing people. No. People aren't buying products, so they don't have money to buy products with. They don't have jobs from which to make money. And of all people who now admit this, Bill Kristol, I think he did this by mistake, but this is on Fox News Sunday. Listen to this quote.
Republicans make a mistake if they focus on big business and corporate tax rates. Corporations have a ton of cash. The corporate tax rate is not killing big business America. Small business creates most of the jobs. That's a regulatory matter. It's an individual tax rate matter, I think.
Now, the fact of the matter is that if you as an individual in your small business are taking in more than $250,000, the issue is not in profits. The issue is not your tax rate. And it's not regulations. And those regulations are barely an issue of the federal government. But there you have it. Republicans looking to cut capital gains rates, looking to drop the corporate tax rate from 35% to 25%, looking to allow companies to repatriate their profits from overseas at a 5% tax rate, all a lie. Great quote via Matt Iglesias and I think Daniel Kuhn from Thomas Jefferson talking about income disparity. I'm going to put this in my back pocket because I'm going to go to I'm going to do in Rattigan today. I know I'm going to run into Tim Carney. I would love to hear him say, I don't like Jefferson anyways. That's what he'll say. Letter to Madison, 1785. The property of this country is absolutely concentrated in very few hands. I ask myself, I'm skipping around here. I ask myself, what could be the reason that so many should be permitted to beg who are willing to work in a country where there is very considerable proportion of uncultivated lands? These lambs are kept idle mostly for the ask of game. It should seem then that there must be, because of the enormous wealth of the proprietors, which places them above attention to the increase of their revenues by permitting these lands to be labored.
I am conscious that an equal division of property is impracticable. But the consequences of this enormous inequality producing so much misery to the bulk of mankind, legislators cannot invent too many devices for subdividing property. In other words, redistribution of wealth cannot be overly pursued by legislators. Another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point, and to tax the higher portions of property in geometrical progression as they rise. This is what is known as a progressive tax policy. In this country, our tax policy is largely regressive. Whenever there is in any country uncultivated lands and unemployed poor, it is clear that the laws of property have been so far extended as to violate natural right. The earth is given as a common stock for man to labor and live on. If, for the encouragement of industry, we allow it to be appropriated, we must take care that other employment be furnished to those excluded from the appropriation. If we do not, the fundamental right to labor the earth returns to the unemployment. It is not too soon to provide by every possible means that as few as possible shall be without a little portion of land. In other words, redistribute the wealth and the opportunity throughout the country by just about any means necessary when you have a situation where the wealth is concentrated in too few hands. When we come back, we'll be talking to John Amato of Crooks and Liars on Delta's Union Button. We are back. Sam Suter on the Majority Report on the phone. Always a pleasure to talk to my friend John Amato from Crooks and Liars. I know you all go there to Crooks and Liars because it's the best place online to see any type of video, A, and B, there's great writers. One of whom I have on the phone right now, John Amato.
Hey, Sam.
How are you?
I'm very good this Monday morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what's going on with Delta?
Well, Delta, as a lot of readers know, is like the only major airline that isn't unionized. And there's, you know, since the Republicans have taken over the House, this goes back decades with labor relations between rail workers and airline workers. And, you know, in the past, there was a weird law that had been passed that said that if you were a union worker and when there was a vote, if you didn't cast your vote, it wasn't like a normal Democratic proposal. In other words, your vote was counted as a no. And so what happened is the National Mediation Board, which is a government agency that oversees the railways and the airlines, rescinded that old law, obviously knowing that it was anti-democratic, and reinstated a new law which says that, you know, if you don't vote, if you don't make the vote for whatever reason, it doesn't count as a no vote. I mean, just think in our election cycles, if people didn't vote an election, instead of not showing up, it would just be considered a no vote, and that's basically election fraud and voter fraud.
Right. I mean, there is no, I've never heard of any type of system where the absence of a vote is necessarily given to one side or the other.
And it was obviously, it was a no vote because there has been sort of a long-standing anti-union bias over the past 30, 40, 50 years in many respects.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, what's like, there's been a lot of reporting done on this now, most, you know, a lot of it coming out of the blogosphere. And like, just think, like, you know, one of the problems with as we found with campaign financing laws, is that certain representatives that are on in government positions take obviously big money from Delta Airlines to make sure that their anti-union busting goes on. And so a rep, a very powerful rep on the Transportation Committee, John Mika, is taking hundreds of thousands of dollars in money from Delta Airlines, and he's now trying to, there's a new FAA bill that's going through the House, and he's pushing to turn back this vote law, which basically makes it an undemocratic system. And, you know, and so there were studies done, and then if John Mika himself was running an election, and if the same rules applied to his own, he would not have been elected, even in a seat, because all these no votes would have made him lose the election. So it's bizarre, but it's so anti-democratic, it's beyond belief. And so there's a big fight right now. You know, luckily in the Senate, you know, there's another bill going through the Senate, and there's support there to you know, fight this. Now, all Republicans haven't been on board for this, and it did, Mika's provision did get through, but there were four Republicans that you know, sided with Democrats on this on the grounds that it's not a right-left issue. It's an anti-democratic issue, and which was quite surprising because it only got out of committee by one vote. And usually, as we've seen in the past, especially under the Obama administration, that the Republicans never break ranks.
Now, how active has Delta in particular been in trying to push this thing? I mean, didn't they at one point like actually bounce passengers so they could send anti-union thugs essentially to Washington?
Oh, yes, absolutely. They have these weird provisions that nobody else has, where if you're a Delta, you know, employee and you want to go to Congress to, you know, actively act as a lobbyist, they can bounce paying fares off flights and replace them with, you know, Delta employees that are going to attack the union and support Delta Airlines. I mean, when have we ever seen that happen? Especially, you know, in the airline business, as we know, it's you know, it hasn't been the tightest ship. You know, it's been in a lot of, you know, it's had its problems after 9/11, obviously. And but they're going out and telling people, hey, you know what, we'll bump a paying customer so you can go lobby. And it's really, it's just, it's kind of disgusting. Let's put it, you know, long. And also, another investigative piece came out in Georgia and found that, and this is why this is important. There also, there was a report done where a Georgia state legislator received free upgrades from Delta to platinum status, you know, if they supported their legislation, and it's valued at $10,000 to $15,000 a year. Just think about that. These days, when you fly,
is that part of their, let me just ask, is that part of their frequent bribers program?
Yeah, that's true. It is. It's. I mean, it's unbelievable.
You get a certain amount of miles for every bribe that you take, or something like that. Good to be redeemed across.
Well, it's. I mean, look, we've all been flying over the last decade, and you know, if your flight isn't like 4 or 5 hours, there's, you can't, you know, there's nothing to eat on the flight, you know, unless you're in first class or business class. So how valuable, just at a comfort level, forget about a bigger seat and wider room. It's really, you know, the way airlines are today, it's really difficult to even fly. The experience is not pleasurable. You know, flights, you know, they've cut so many flights down. And, you know, it's not like it used to be where there were many flights going back and forth to different cities. So these types of bribes are worth 10 times more just on the experience of trying to fly.
Wow, that's pretty stunning. And I would imagine that to receive a free gift like that from the Florida State, from the Georgia State Legislature, I would imagine that's not just happening with them. And do they have particularly lax laws in terms of what kind of gifts they can get?
Well, you know, it kind of flies under the radar, you know, because who's checking sort of upgrades? You know what I mean?
It, right.
It's like, again, and especially as campaign finance laws just recently have been, you know, withered and watered down by the Roberts Court, you know, these types of things, you know, unless you're like, you know, being able to get into these records to see how people, you know, who's checking, you know, politicians' flight records to see if they've gotten upgrades. It's kind of an obscure way to then pad their pockets, and it's a valuable way. So it's really a fight going on at this point, and it's sad to see, but you know, there's at least there you can see there are Republicans in the House, which is to me remarkable in this day and age, that have actually flipped their vote. So you know, there's people that do feel uncomfortable about this, but this measure will pass the House. So it's got to fall in the Senate, and it should. You know, that's why we need the vote probably coming down before the next election, because the Senate is a bit vulnerable. With,
right. Is there any central clearinghouse? Is there any specific site people can check out to get more information on this and track what's going on?
Well, you know, I can tell the readers, A, that if they go to Crooks and Liars and just search the term Delta, you'll come up with a ton of posts on this. Daily Coast, McJones writing a lot about it. I just actually had a bunch of websites up for you. There's Delta, by the way, just so everybody knows, their lobbying now is extended to Rep. Issa, and he is now investigating the NMB, or the National Mediation Board, to check out to see how you know, if this group is biased against Delta, since they recently overturned that decades-old law that said, you know, if you don't show up to vote, it counts as a no. So now their dollars and their influence is stretching out to, you know, ICE's, you know, crazy investigation board, and they're going to do everything they can to you know, paint the NMB as you know, some Van Jones, you know,
of course. I mean, we all know there's a huge amount of communist
organization, and they're going to make this into, you know, they're going to try to get as much public air as they can, and to just smear unions. It's been a goal for decades from the Grover Norquist-led, you know, Jack Abramoff college Republican days in the early 80s to break unions, to bust up public unions. We're seeing what's happening. You know, our pal Joe Sudby at America Blog called Delta Airlines the Scott Walker airline, and that's what's really happening, and it's kind of sad, and we're urging all our readers and anyone that's listening to these broadcasts to boycott Delta.
There you have it, folks. You can head to crooksandliars.com to get more information. We'll, of course, have a link up at majority.fm. John Amato, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, my friend. It's great talking to you.
Talk to you soon. All right, folks. That is the program for today. You can join me in the post show. I am at Majority FM. If you have the opportunity to become a member, please do, folks. Please do. Today in the post show, I'll be talking about the movie I actually went to this weekend. Yes, I went out to a movie. My mother was in town. And
you're doing anything to get rid of that Rosen segment.
Exactly. I'm actually going to movies now. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can call me at 646-257-3920. I'll be back in just a minute.